Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. It seems appropriate on St. Patrick's Day to talk about something green, money. Though, in this case, the money may not be green. It may not even be money. We'll spend the hour talking about cryptocurrency. Donald Trump has become a true believer in crypto. He started his own meme coin, as did his wife, Melania. Trump also has been actively promoting cryptocurrency initiatives, including the creation of a strategic Bitcoin reserve and a U.S. digital asset stockpile as part of his administration's embrace of these blockchain assets that are untethered to the control of governments. This is a first, and it could have a profound impact. Cryptocurrencies have historically been highly volatile and viewed as a means of avoiding the eyes of governments around the world, and yet, with this move, our government would be putting its seal of approval on crypto. In North Carolina, the General Assembly is looking into adding cryptocurrencies to our state's retirement investment portfolio. Republican House Speaker Destin Hall, who sponsored the bill, believes it could generate positive yields. To date, the world of cryptocurrency has been the domain of early adopters, tech companies, hedge funds, and risk takers. Some have made tons of money, others have lost an equal amount or more. So exactly what is crypto? How does it work? And should governments be adopting a method of exchange other than their own national currencies or investing retirement money into cryptocurrency? We look to get some answers to those questions this hour. Rafael Nam is Senior Business Editor for NPR. Colin Campbell is Capital Bureau Chief for WUNC. And Will Duran is State Government Reporter for WRAL-TV in Raleigh. Thank you all for being here. Welcome to the program.
Great to be here.
Rafael, let me start with you. Reporting on finance and various markets and currencies is what you've been doing now for decades for NPR. So give us a primer on exactly what this cryptocurrency stuff is.
So let's. It all started in 2008, really. And it all was a single creation of a person, who goes by the name of Satoshi Nakamoto. And still nobody knows who Satoshi is. He's somebody who has masked his identity, or it may be a she. And in 2008, he created this thing called Bitcoin, or he created a white paper that laid the foundation for what would become Bitcoin. And keep in mind, in 2008, if you remember back on that time, it was the time of the global financial crisis. Banks had gone under, people had lost their homes, and it was a pretty bad economic situation back then. And Satoshi, I guess, envisioned a currency that would operate outside of the financial system, something that people would be able to use, that no central bank could control, no government could control. It would be a peer-to-peer sort of currency that people could use to exchange, to pay for things, and the government will have no access to it, and it will be completely outside of it. And that's how he created this white paper for Bitcoin, and then Bitcoin took off. There were some people who kind of really supported this idea, and then from there, it became together, and by 2019, it launched, 2009, Bitcoin launched formally. So that was the creation of Bitcoin.
So there are cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin. There are others other than Bitcoin. And then there are so-called meme coins, which is what Donald Trump and Melania Trump put up after his inauguration. And meme coins are not the same as crypto in that I think they have no practical use. Vendors will not accept them for payment. What Trump's meme coin appears to be is simply a way to send money directly to Donald Trump. And it brought him a great infusion of cash, as I understand it. Is that accurate?
Yeah, it is.
Okay. Zeke Pho, who wrote the book Number Go Up, Inside Crypto's Wild Rise and Staggering Fall, spoke about crypto and meme coins with Dave Davies on NPR's Fresh Air back in January, during which he said meme coins are, quote, like a new kind of gambling game, except that it's basically rigged in favor of whoever started the meme coin. But because meme coins are virtually useless unless you are the person who started the meme coin, then there was a negative reaction among crypto traders as a result of Donald Trump's doing this, because they see crypto as valuable and they see these meme coins as something that discredits their industry. So, okay, but what is crypto based on? Goodwill?
That's the question. That's exactly the question. A lot of people kind of say, oh, meme coins are this kind of different coin. They're different from Bitcoin and the other cryptocurrencies. But really, one of the critics of Bitcoin and other digital currencies like crypto, like Bitcoin, the one thing that they say is, what's the value? Like, what's the purpose of Bitcoin? Because, like I said before earlier, like Satoshi had envisioned it as a way for, you know, for people to pay each other to be essentially as a cash system. But it hasn't become that. I mean, when was the last time people can use Bitcoin to buy a cup of coffee or go out and buy something from Amazon? You can't do it. And so a lot of people question, well, why is there so much focus on meme coins? And actually, hang on, what is actually Bitcoin? And what are the other digital currencies like Bitcoin? What do they actually do? And they're really a speculative investment. That's what it's become. It's become a way to make money. And it's not just Bitcoin. It's not just President Trump. But it's also like everybody else in a lot of the big banks in Wall Street now are starting to trade digital currencies like Bitcoin.
Correct me if I'm wrong. You can buy a Tesla with Bitcoin. You can make exchanges on PayPal with Bitcoin. Can you not?
You can, but it's not quite practical, right? It's not as practical as using dollars. It's not as practical as using, say, Venmo to transfer money. There are ways to do it, for sure, but it's not widespread. It's not the use of it. It's not widespread. And certainly that's what Satoshi and the sort of the early visionaries of Bitcoin had essentially envisioned, that Bitcoin would become that, a currency.
So Carol Goforth, who is a professor of law at the University of Arkansas and author of Regulation of Crypto Transactions, calls crypto, quote, money, property, a commodity, and a security all at the same time. You agree with that, Raphael?
No, because you see, I think that's how a lot of people, you know, once something doesn't have, so this is something that a lot of critics of digital currencies kind of, you know, say. Once something doesn't actually have like an inherent value, a lot of people sort of project into it whatever they want. So a lot of people think, oh, Bitcoin could be this and that, or digital currencies could become, you know, in the future, they could become this kind of payment, or it could become like a way to, you know, hedge against inflation, for example, which is one of the things that a lot of people say. But in reality, it hasn't turned out to be any of those things. You know, it's become a speculative investment, a way for bankers and traders to make money.
And yet, journalist Laura Shin, who is known, I think, for her podcast Unchained, one of the longest running crypto podcasts, says that this currency is truly a far superior form of money than any other money we have ever had, purely based on the technological level. Okay, but money is money. What has technology got to do with it?
So there, she does have a point there, which is why the underpinnings of Bitcoin. I mean, think of Bitcoin. Bitcoin is not like the U.S. dollar. It's not like a paper cash, right? It's bits of coding that Satoshi and others have been able to pull together. So, but those bits of coding, the electronic systems that power Bitcoin, and don't ask me to explain it because it's very complicated, very geeky stuff. But a lot of the applications or the basis of Bitcoin, the bits and the coding that makes up Bitcoin, a lot of banks can use that to, that's called the blockchain, and people can use that for other financial uses. So in that sense, there is a technological sort of purpose for Bitcoin.
Blockchain was one of the big words being tossed around several years ago when Bitcoin came to the surface of many people's attentions. And I don't know what that is. I've never been able to understand what it is. I've never gotten a straight answer out of anybody about what these Bitcoins or what cryptocurrency really is. And I'm just curious, Raphael, if anybody really understands it completely.
I'm sure there's somebody, Mike, that really, really understands it, but it is really beyond even very smart individuals who say, I just don't get it.
Should that be a red flag?
It could be. It could be. I just, you know, there is, to be fair, Mike, there is a lot of very geeky and very complicated technological stuff that we don't understand. But somehow, you know, people are betting the future on it, like AI, for example. So, yes, you know, I am told by very, very sort of smart technological experts that there is, you know, there is inherent use in blockchains. There's sort of, this is the technology behind digital currencies. So I take them at their face value, you know, that there is some kind of use, but it's complicated. And it's not something that even your, you know, a smart average person would be able to understand.
So blockchain was being touted as the big security feature, if I understood it correctly, of how this currency is handled in these server banks, which is where it lives. It lives on computer servers, which consume great amounts of electricity to keep it all going. But the blockchain was the big security feature. Couldn't be broken. As long as you had your key, you could get to your money, but nobody else could. But haven't cryptocurrencies been hacked? And I mean recently.
Yes, there. I mean, there are ways to, you know, to essentially to be able to hack it. And, you know, there's a lot of, you know, sort of bad actors out there that are essentially working on this. So, yes, it is hackable. And I think, you know, there has been exchanges that have been hacked. And so it's not certainly, it's not the, the, you know, the sort of the it's certainly breachable. It can, you know, I don't know how illegal actors are able to get it, but yeah, some have been able to hack into wallets.
Will Durand is with us. He is a state government reporter for WRAL-TV in Raleigh. And we're going to talk about Donald Trump's ideas surrounding the federal government's involving in crypto as we go through the program. But it seems that not many people have a very firm grasp on exactly what this currency is. And people in government are known for being notoriously slow to understand technology and technological developments, and governments at all levels have been slow to adopt a lot of things. I mean, they're probably still on Word Perfect in some of these offices and not using Word, for crying out loud. But do the people in North Carolina state government, Will, particularly House Speaker Destin Hall, who has pushed this idea of using crypto for the retirement fund, it's his bill, do they really understand it or the technology surrounding it?
Well, as we just heard, I mean, even, you know, very, very highly skilled, you know, computer scientists don't necessarily understand every single piece of it. So I don't think that you can, you know, expect your average politician to understand the technology behind it, but they understand, you know, the financial charts behind it. And they see that, okay, here's this thing that has exploded in value, you know, going up 300-400% in the last few years. You know, and they're looking at the state pension plan, some of the other, you know, the state highway fund, you know, some of these separate pots of money that we have in state government to pay for things. And they're saying, hey, why are we putting this money into T-bonds, into stocks, into, you know, cash investments when we could be, you know, getting way more money, you know, by jumping on this crypto bandwagon and trying to, you know, get in and, you know, get our own piece of those big returns.
Colin Campbell's with us from WUNC, and I'm going to throw you the curve. I always throw you. I have 30 seconds. Is that the whole motivation here, to make as much money as we can, as quickly as we can for the state retirement fund using crypto? Is that the motivation?
That's certainly the stated motivation, but I do think there's some concerns among critics that a lot of Republicans have a lot invested in cryptocurrency more broadly nationally, including, as we mentioned earlier, the president. So I think that there is a fear that are we putting state funding in this to help the cryptocurrency market in general beyond just helping the best returns possible on the pension funds?
Why would we want to help the market?
A lot of folks, powerful folks, have stuff invested in the market.
Okay. We're going to come back and talk about why government should be or should not be involved in crypto and the opaqueness of this currency when we come back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with Raphael Numb. He's senior business editor for NPR. Colin Campbell is Capital Bureau Chief for WUNC. Will Durand is state government reporter for WRAL Television. And we're talking about the intersection of cryptocurrency and governments at all levels and what it is and why we would want to be involved in all of this. This is kind of a sidebar question, Raphael, but I was reported that government watchdogs, the ethics watchdogs, were fairly upset with Donald Trump's involvement in meme coins shortly after his inauguration and his promoting of cryptocurrencies after a bunch of crypto guys pumped cash into his presidential campaign. Those watchdogs believed that this presented all kinds of ethical conflicts of interests. But those watchdogs are all gone now. Is that partially why?
It could be. I mean, I think the President Trump has had a long-stated kind of resistance to regulators and the like. So there is other reasons. I don't want to say necessarily that President Trump got rid of his regulators because he didn't want them digging into his sort of his business conflicts. But yeah, I mean, there's a number of reasons why I think President Trump has long wanted to get rid of regulators and other sort of market cops.
One of the there is money to be made in crypto. There's also a lot of money to be lost. And one of the things that we kept hearing about at the dawn of cryptocurrencies is the fact that because of the blockchain, it's difficult to trace who owns what, how much they own, etc. And you can pretty much put money in there and make that money untraceable and therefore untaxable. Does that mean that this is a haven for criminal activity?
It has been. I mean, if you look at a lot of the bad actors, whether it be smugglers, drug traders, terrorists, they're all known to be using different digital assets, things like Bitcoin, other digital currencies as well, because of the same reasons that you just stated, Mike. It's untraceable and it's outside of sort of the purview of regulators globally.
And it's also the purview of young people who see this as an opportunity to get rich quick. I remember being at a party and a 19-year-old kept talking to me about crypto and wanting me to get involved in putting money into crypto because he put money into crypto. And I don't know how it did for him, but I thought, why don't you put your money in treasuries? You're 19. You can make some money. It is a place that people have put their money because they want to have gains quickly. Have most people been successful at that, or have they lost that money, or has it stayed relatively stable for them? Do you know?
It has not stayed stable. I mean, that's one of the biggest concerns that regulators and other opponents of digital currencies have, is that the digital currencies are traditionally very volatile. I've been a financial journalist for over two decades, and I've seen a lot of Bitcoin and other digital currencies go up and go down significantly. So, I mean, if you think back as early as 2022, when this big exchange called FTX collapsed, a lot of digital assets, including Bitcoin, just crashed. So it wasn't that long ago. I mean, that was only 2 years ago or so. So yes, it can go up, but it can also go down. And it's something to keep in mind.
FTX was the Sam Bankman-Fried crypto exchange, which had no money backing it, evidently. The opaque nature of cryptocurrencies is something that could be, I suppose, valuable to governments, or would it be more of a danger to governments and to their citizens, because we don't know much about what's there? Raphael.
A lot of governments have the latter view, that they think it's very dangerous because, unless they have no idea of what crypto is for, who's using crypto. So that's already a red flag for them. But it's also that if you have average people, those young people, Mike, that you were just mentioning, that really want to get into crypto, and they lose a lot of money, like it happened in 2022. That's something that governments don't generally want. They don't want their young citizens kind of investing life savings into something that's so volatile and speculative. So there are a number of reasons why a lot of governments, except the U.S., I guess, have been kind of, reluctant to embrace cryptos.
I want people to keep that in the backs of their heads before we start talking about North Carolina's involvement in this in their retirement fund. Getting what Zeke Foe, who wrote Numbers Go Up, Inside Crypto's Wild Rise and Staggering Fall, what he had to say about crypto on Fresh Air. After spending years studying these currencies, trying to see if there was something there, something more than just gambling on the price of what he called made-up coins, he said all that he found was, quote, a lot of scams, a lot of grift, a lot of even worse things, but not a lot of actual uses for regular people. What should that tell us, Raphael?
That's that. I mean, for a lot of critics of cryptos, that's a bit of a red flag. I mean, the fact that there's not a lot of practical uses. I mean, there is a way. It is a way to make money. That's kind of what it boils down to, and that's why I think a lot of the young people that you spoke with, a lot of people in Wall Street, that's why they're very excited, because it's a chance to make significant amounts of money potentially. But it's also, the risk is that, you know, people could really end up losing all of it.
What, there are a few companies that take crypto as a means of payment. We mentioned Tesla, we mentioned PayPal, and I think both the founders or people who were involved in early iterations of PayPal and certainly Tesla are involved in cryptocurrencies still to this day, which could explain their motivation. But what is the motivation? Why would a company selling you something want to take that currency as opposed to dollars, pounds, euros? Why?
Well, it's mainly because I think the, they do want to kind of promote the use of, you know, Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. They do want to kind of, you know, try to say, hey, there is real life, you know, life use, you know, uses for this. But mainly it's also because, you know, once, you know, like the, presumably if you get dollars for your product, you know, that dollar may appreciate a little bit, you know, exchange rates and all, then, but Bitcoin could really appreciate, as in you grab Bitcoin from your customer. And if you hold on to that Bitcoin, you could be betting that that Bitcoin will increase in value substantially, and you will hold on to it. And that would be even a bigger source of profit for you.
I understand that, and correct me if I'm wrong, that Tesla is heavily involved or invested in crypto, the value of which will certainly rise if the United States government officially invests. Is our interest in investing in crypto at the federal level because of Elon Musk and Donald Trump's relationship?
I wouldn't go as far as that. I would say, you know, I would say that, you know, there's a lot of the what are called the crypto bros. These are, you know, the sort of younger sort of crypto financial executives who have been, you know, promoting crypto to Trump while he was campaigning. And I think that's kind of been a big source of his turnaround on crypto, because, you know, just, you know, Donald Trump used to be a big opponent of crypto. He used to think, yes, this was a scam. And over the past year, obviously, he's changed his mind. And I think a lot of it is, you know, a lot of crypto executives who have been convincing him that this is, you know, that this is the future. And but it's also campaign donations. I think, you know, a lot of the crypto industry has donated over $100 million to congressional candidates, a lot of them Republicans, you know, to try to promote this. So clearly the crypto industry has shown that they have money to burn.
Colin, do we know of any major campaign donations from cryptocurrency operators or people involved in crypto at some level in campaigns in North Carolina state government?
There are a few. I mean, it's not huge, at least that I've been able to see, but there's a guy I spoke to from my story, Dan Spooler, who's part of the Blockchain Association, involved at the national level. He has donated to several of the top legislators involved in this issue, and he was one of the folks who met with them to draft this legislation. So there's a little bit of that, probably not to the degree we're seeing in some national politics.
I want to be clear that it is not unusual for politicians and government officials to be influenced in various ways by people in industries with which they do business. But David O. Sachs was appointed by the White House to be the White House AI and crypto czar. He is a Silicon Valley investor, reportedly close to Elon Musk. He's another South African native who earlier served as COO of PayPal. He was a Trump supporter going into the election, putting money behind the campaign. Are we to assume that appointment came as a result of that relationship or the influence of Elon Musk or something else?
It's hard to say whether David Sacks was appointed because of that necessarily, but I think David Sacks is somebody that a lot of people in the crypto industry trust and know. And I think I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of people kind of had promoted David Sacks as, you know, as a potential a good candidate as crypto AI and crypto and AI, sorry, AI czar.
So will Donald Trump also appointed Charlotte native and former Republican congressional candidate Beau Hinds to take a national leadership role in cryptocurrency. He is serving on the so-called Crypto Council, whatever that is. What do we know about Beau Hinds' expertise in crypto or what the Crypto Council is doing?
Well, you know, Beau Hinds is a, you know, he's a, I think, a Yale grad. He's very young. You know, he started running for Congress when he was still in his 20s. I think he's probably in his early 30s by now. But, you know, this kind of illustrates a big, and this we've seen this exact same thing inside the state legislature as well, just a big generational divide on this. You know, this idea never came up under previous, you know, iterations of legislative leadership here, but we've got a new Speaker of the House who's 35, who's really pushing for this. And some of the biggest backers in the legislature joining him in this are also, you know, lawmakers who are in their 30s and 40s. And some of the big opponents that we've seen on both sides of the aisle, you know, even people, you know, the Republican Party kind of pushing back against their own leadership are the older lawmakers saying, I don't really know what this is. Seems a little bit like maybe it's a bubble or a pyramid scheme or something. I don't know. Maybe it's a great idea. Maybe not. But it's just, it's confusing and it's strange and different.
As I was reading about this yesterday to get ready for this conversation, I'm a natural skeptic when it comes to this. And I kept thinking to myself, well, maybe it's because you're not young. I'm one of the people who think if TikTok goes away, who gives a rat's, you know what? But there are people out there who love TikTok and would be apoplectic if it went away. How much of this skepticism or fear of going in this direction, Raphael, is strictly generational? We just don't get it because we didn't grow up with it.
There is definitely a generational bit of divide. There is a lot of more kind of, you know, sort of the younger, like Will was saying, there's a younger generation that's embracing crypto, both lawmakers and also financial executives. So yes, that could be playing a role, the age issue. But I think at the end of the day, though, whether you're old or young, I think what the crypto executives are promoting is a chance to, you know, promoting this as a way to make money. And whether you're old or young, I think everybody wants to, you know, do that, right?
Traditionally, currencies have been produced and associated with nation states. They established these paper dollars as a form of legal tender used for the exchange of goods and services. And those nation states have control over how much of that money is in circulation at any given time. And so therefore they can exercise control over the condition of the economy. Cryptocurrencies are not based on nation states. They are not controlled by nation states. They're bits and bytes on the blockchain, completely unregulated. So what gives those currencies their intrinsic value? I mean, the dollar is based on the full faith and credit of the United States. If the United States has a stockpile of Bitcoin somewhere, does that give them the full faith and credit of the United States to back them up? Or are they still just worth what people think they're worth?
At the end of the day, I think it's still, that's something that I think we haven't yet sort of figured out. I think that one of the biggest concerns is that if the U.S. government itself starts stockpiling Bitcoin, like President Trump has said that he will do, then that means that the U.S. government is liable for any big losses. And keep in mind that there has been big losses in Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. So it would be the U.S. now, and really all of us, all taxpayers in the U.S. that, you know, will have money in this stockpile that, you know, Bitcoin's in the stockpile that could be losing money and could be losing significant amounts of money. So, and that's a scary proposition for a lot of critics.
This has bipartisan support. in to some degree. Donald Trump is not the first occupant of the White House to have been interested in crypto. Back in 2023, President Biden was exploring the possibility of a government-backed cryptocurrency, and yet one of Donald Trump's first acts was to roll back the work of the Biden administration in that area, and he promised to end the government's war on crypto. How does the Trump approach differ, Raphael?
Well, I think what Trump was trying to roll back was essentially the sort of, because Biden, under the Biden administration, there was some interest in exploring crypto, but there was also a lot of aggressive enforcement against what they considered to be sort of the bad actors. And there was a big tussle between the SEC, which is the market cop in Wall Street, and a lot of crypto companies. And a lot of crypto companies felt that the SEC and the U.S. government were unfairly targeting them. And I think what President Trump has tried to change in a lot of ways is essentially stop the enforcement, the aggressive enforcement against crypto, and let crypto grow. Let crypto as an industry develop.
Is there a connection between that approach, Will, and this sudden idea of incorporating cryptocurrencies into the retirement fund in North Carolina, that if Donald Trump gets his way and crypto is unregulated and it becomes part of a national reserve currency, that this would be a good time then for the state to start investing? Is there a connection?
Well, it could be. I spoke, with Treasurer Brad Briner recently, who would be in charge of making these decisions. And he said that, we want North Carolina to put out a welcome sign for the crypto industry. And he thinks that, this is a good tool that could be, in the state's arsenal. And the way that this bill is written would, have some limits. The state couldn't invest more than 10% of any given fund into crypto. So it's not like we'd be going all in on this. But, 10% of a pension fund is still billions of dollars that North Carolina could be putting into cryptocurrencies.
And we're going to explore what's behind this. This is Destin Hall's idea. He's the new Speaker of the House in Raleigh. We're going to talk about why he thinks it's a good idea and why Josh Stein, the Democratic governor, thinks it's a good idea. We'll talk about that and more when we come back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about cryptocurrency and the potential adoption of cryptocurrency into the federal government stockpiles and also the use of crypto in our retirement funds for state employees here in North Carolina. Raphael Nam is with us. He is senior business editor for NPR. Colin Campbell is Capital Bureau Chief at WUNC. And Will Duran is state government reporter for WRAL Television. Colin, the idea of getting involved in crypto by the North Carolina government is all in a bill called the Digital Assets Investments Act. It passed the House a couple of weeks ago. Where does it stand, and what does that bill promise or propose?
Yeah, so we're waiting to see whether the Senate's going to take this up. Senate Leader Phil Berger has said he doesn't quite understand cryptocurrency, much like a lot of folks who are on the older end of the spectrum. So whether the Senate's interested in going along with this, I think, remains to be seen. On the House side, certainly anything that has Speaker Hall's sponsorship, and this is, I think, one of the only bills that he has put his name on all session so far, which really shows that it's a big priority for him in his early months as Speaker. So as Will mentioned earlier, this allows them to put, I think, up to 10% of the state's pension funds into cryptocurrency, not necessarily direct investments in things like Bitcoin, but they would have to go through what are called exchange-traded funds, which are sort of like mutual funds. So they argue that that gives you a little bit more balance, a little less risk involved in this, and it's ultimately up to the treasurer. The state treasurer, who is Republican Brad Briner, can decide if he doesn't want to invest anything into cryptocurrency under this bill. He can still invest nothing. He can go up to 10%. He can go somewhere in the middle, and the argument seems to be let Briner decide. He's a former investment manager for Michael Bloomberg, a Republican who was just elected as treasurer. Lawmakers seem to want to give him these extra tools or extra ways to sort of balance out the state pension plan portfolio. I think the big backdrop to this is that there's a concern that the pension plan's returns have not been what they should be. The previous state treasurer, Republican Dale Falwell, was very conservative in investments, put a lot into cash, which is something that Briner and others have said we need to get away from. We need to be a little bit more aggressive in what we invest in so that we get higher returns to be able to pay retirees' pensions for state employees. And so this is considered to be part of that mix, with the thought process being that the stock market's way down, but cryptocurrency is up, yeah, then you have a better mix of assets in their portfolio. But we'll see where this goes from here in the legislature.
Will, did you want to chime in there?
Yeah, it's interesting to note, despite being backed by the House Speaker, like Colin noted, this bill actually failed to move forward the first time it went up in committee, which is, for people who don't follow the state legislature, pretty rare. Typically, if something's going to get put up into a committee meeting, it's going to pass.
And I should note, it actually hasn't passed the House yet. I think we may have misspoken earlier. It's currently been referred to the Committee on Pensions and Retirement and has another committee to go to before. So not quite the fast track that we often see with bills sponsored by legislative leaders.
Okay.
Exactly. And it actually, like I said, it failed to move out of its first one. And then the following day, that committee was informed that it would be meeting again. And the House Speaker showed up in person. And, he was there talking privately with some of the more vocal opponents of this ahead of time. So this is clearly something that Speaker Hall is putting a lot of his own, political capital into to get this passed and moved through the legislature.
Yeah, well,
despite
correct me
some
if I'm,
opposition from lawmakers.
Will, since you cover state government, correct me if I'm wrong. It's not unusual, but it is rare that a House Speaker will put a bill up. And when he does, it's because he truly believes in whatever it is he's putting up, correct?
Exactly. The top lawmakers really typically only put their name on a small handful of bills every year. And in part, that's to send a message, to fellow lawmakers that, hey, when you see something that's got my name on it, it's important and you need to treat it as thus.
So crypto has this amazing upside potential, and House Speaker Dustin Hall, who is the sponsor of the bill, has said that passing this legislation would make the state a leader in technological innovations because cryptocurrency investments have, quote, the potential to generate positive yields for our state investment fund. But crypto also is highly volatile and it has a deep downside. Does the state invest in any other instruments, Will, that are so wildly erratic?
State has plenty of investments. I mean, we invest in the stock market. And, as we've seen in, recent days, the stock market can take big dips as well. I don't know that there's anything quite so volatile as crypto that the state is currently invested in. And we actually heard from, from a state lawmaker, Brian Cohn, who's a Democrat from here in the Triangle. He said, look, I'm invested in Bitcoin and some other cryptocurrencies, and I don't think it's something that the state should be invested in because I've seen firsthand how volatile this market can be. He was basically saying, it's fine for individual people to kind of take a gamble on like he's doing, but especially when you're dealing with other people's money, with their retirement future, there's been a lot of hesitancy to engage in that kind of risk taking.
Yeah, the proposal in this bill is to put up to 10% of the state's retirement fund into a crypto. And Flint Benson, who is the State Employees Association, he's with the State Employees Association, he doesn't like the idea.
Bitcoin has been a roller coaster at best, and state employees and retirees do not like the conversation about investing in this high volatile currency.
Colin, he went on to say that retirement funds should not be, quote, played with because they are a promised benefit. Is he alone in that opposition, either inside or outside the General Assembly? And if he is not alone, how big is the opposition to this?
I think that's a big concern that he addressed. The State Employees Association of North Carolina, obviously very concerned about state employees' pensions, that is sort of a long-term benefit. You go work for state government. You're not going to necessarily make as much as you might in the private sector, but you get this nice pension at the end of the road. And that's something that they're very concerned about protecting. So I think you're going to hear this similar critique from other corners that, you know, it's one thing to have a personal investment in Bitcoin or cryptocurrency, but to take the state's retirement fund, which is, you know, invested over this long period of time in something that has some pretty big swings, ups and downs. We're not sure what it'll look like in 10 or 20 years. I think that's a big worry for a lot of folks who are counting on this this pension system.
One would hope, Raphael, that a retirement pension fund would be a highly diversified portfolio, and one would hope your personal portfolio has some diversification in it to protect yourself from the highs and lows and the gyrations of things. And the stock market does go up and down. Most investments do. So are these fears about crypto justified? How would you compare investing in crypto against any other investment that you might make in the stock market? Is it comparable, or is it more like going and playing the tables in Vegas?
I don't think it's comparable. I mean, we are talking about stocks that have, you know, decades, if not centuries of history, you know, and you have crypto, which is created since 2008, like I was saying. And crypto, the volatility that crypto tends to see is way above what you would see in the stock market or pretty much on most speculative assets that people are buying, regular people would have access to. So I would confidently say that crypto tends to be by far the most volatile.
Other states have already put their toe in this water and have invested in cryptocurrencies. I don't know how long that's been going on, but do we have any idea how well or how badly they have done as a result, Raphael?
No, we don't, because it hasn't been, you know, to the extent that, you know, we can see sort of the returns. It hasn't been very tentative sort of stepping in and not to the numbers that, you know, that I think a lot of crypto executives would like to see. But no, it's hard to kind of draw sweeping conclusions at this time yet.
Colin, as you reported recently, the bill's co-sponsor, Republican Steve Ross from Alamance County, says, quote, "We have to do something because we continue to lose money in the pension plan. We're just not meeting our goal. And so we want to give the state treasurer every tool available." Is the state pension plan losing money, or is it simply not growing as quickly as they would like? And if it's losing money, how much?
I think the general concern is it's not. You need a certain level of returns to be able to pay for the retirement benefits, and it's coming in lower than what's projected, in part because this conservative investment style of the previous treasurer. So this is a big goal across the board for the state and for new treasurer Brad Briner to try to see if he can increase the rate of returns on this overall investment portfolio. So there's not a risk that the state retirement fund can't pay the pension benefits that people have been promised. So this is sort of pitched as one way to get at that. I think one of the reasons you do see support from Briner is that he has a fair bit of flexibility in this. The other states that I've written about, one was Wyoming that had a similar bill, but in their similar bill, it was requiring their state treasurer to invest pension funds in Bitcoin, and their state treasurer very much was opposed to it. That bill ended up dying in a committee, I think in part because there's this fear of coming in with a mandate that then could put things in a much more risky position than if the state treasurer can, you know, enter and exit this market, you know, depending on his, you know, judgments as to whether it's a good idea or not.
Well, you always want to buy low and sell high, and you can't really time the market, but you would need, I would think, in a pension plan, the flexibility of getting out of something that's not doing well relatively quickly. And certain investments are easier to get out of quickly than others. How do you compare that to crypto? How quickly can you get out?
That is a great question. I'm not personally invested in crypto, so I can't speak from personal experience. I know that the way that this bill is set up is it would have the state not pick individual coins to invest in. So, you know, the state wouldn't be directly invested in Dogecoin or Bitcoin. They would be investing in ETFs, you know, which a lot of people who have, you know, their own investment funds probably are in some sort of ETF with stocks or, you know, mutual funds or things like that. So that kind of theory, I think, is, you know, pretty similar to how a lot of other investments work. And we've seen investment groups like BlackRock also using these or getting into these crypto ETFs as well.
Explain ETFs. They're electronically traded funds. They're not. Are they like a basket of investments, like a mutual fund that you own little pieces of everything in this little basket? And is that how it works?
Essentially, yeah. It's a way to try to diversify your holdings. So you know, if you had a stock market ETF for tech companies, you wouldn't just be putting all your money into Apple or Nvidia. You'd be spreading it out to try to, you know, avoid risk.
Just to give you an idea of how this, the value of I guess Bitcoin or these other cryptocurrencies have gone up and down, we did a program on Bitcoin in 2021. On the day that we did that program, Bitcoin was valued at just over $58,000 per coin. At that time, its closest competitor was valued at $2,000. That's a big, big spread. Yesterday, if I'm not mistaken, the value of Bitcoin was approximately $83,686.60. That's an increase of over 44% in just 4 years, Raphael. Is that a good increase in value as compared to other investments?
Well, if you look at it that way, certainly it is. But not everybody has invested in Bitcoin at the time. Just to put in perspective, a couple of months ago, Bitcoin was trading at over 100,000. It's that kind of volatility that I think people need to be mindful of. That, you know, that may sound great, you know, going, you know, that may sound like a great rate of return. But if you look at it in a broad period during those 4 years, chances are, Bitcoin did go up and down significantly. So if taking that metric, yes, it looks good, but you really have to look at the whole volatility of it. And it is a volatile currency.
Yeah, as you said, a little while ago, Bitcoin was valued at $108,000. The lowest it's been since 2021 is $16,000. That's another enormous spread. Are there other investments that do that a retirement fund would necessarily want to be involved in? I'm not sure who to ask that question of.
I can't think of one myself, but...
If you're young and your time horizon is long, maybe you can afford to do that. And maybe it's play money to you. I'll put $1,000 in this thing and see what happens. But if you are a retirement fund, then these funds need to be there for people who have pumped money into them over the years. Is that responsible?
Well, part of it, I think, Mike, is that also in recent years, I mean, a decade or more, the state legislature really has not been able to pay for much of an increase to people's pensions. No big raises to pensions. Every once in a while, we'll see a one-time bonus on someone's pension, but they call them cost of living adjustments, basically, you know, right, to help your pension keep up with inflation. And the legislature just has not been able to pay for that. And they've been hearing about that from retired workers. And guess who votes more than a lot of other people? It's older retirees. And so they're looking for some sort of way to be able to help out these state workers and give them this sort of cost of living adjustment that they've needed to have for years. And so this is, you know, just one tool that they're looking at, as a potential way to be able
Colin,
to.
Colin, I'm sorry, finish your, to be able to catch up. Colin, yeah. I mentioned this has bipartisan support. It may be the brainchild of the Speaker of the House, who's a Republican, but the Democratic Governor, Josh Stein, also supports this. Has he said why?
He's interested in looking into it. I don't know that he's necessarily indicated he's 100% certain he's going to sign it yet. Some of this is sort of seeing how different lawmakers shake out on this. I mean, do Democrats embrace this? I don't know that we're going to necessarily see 100% of Democrats come on board with this. We've already heard concerns from some of the Democrats in the legislature, including, as Will mentioned, someone who's actually invested in Bitcoin. So I think the ultimate calculus around this remains to be seen. But I think the governor is certainly interested in looking at it. He's trying to build a good relationship with the Republicans, particularly in the new leadership of House Speaker Dustin Hall. So I don't think he's going to dismiss it out of hand, but it might be a little premature to say whether or not he's going to sign it if it gets to that point.
Donald Trump wants to set up a national Bitcoin stockpile, and he also wants to set up a crypto reserve. We have an oil reserve. We have a gold reserve. We release oil and gold into the economy. as the need arises during emergencies. I'm not sure what would be the emergency to release Bitcoin into the economy, maybe just to level it off. But where do you see this going, Raphael? I have 30 seconds. Is it going to be boom or bust for crypto?
Well, right now, certainly the times look very good for crypto, and the administration, Congress, everybody's lining up behind crypto. So it looks good. But is that a good thing? That's the question that we're going to find out, I guess.
Raphael Nam is the senior business editor for NPR, Colin Campbell's Capital Bureau Chief at WUNC, and Will Duran is state government reporter at WRAL-TV. We'll be following this story as it winds its way through the legislature. You can depend on it. Thanks for the hour.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. Our producer is Chris Jones. We have additional production help from Jesse Steinmetz. For more information on Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.